Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's the first Monday in October, and you know what that means. The Supreme Court is back in session. The government has been shut down for a week, but apparently the shutdown doesn't apply to the Supreme Court. And every day it's applying to fewer and fewer parts of government, as Congress votes to fund projects and departments piece by piece. As you may have heard, Obamacare health insurance exchanges are up and running. House Republicans continue to claim Americans don't want Obamacare, even as the exchanges are overwhelmed with much higher demand than expected. There's a tornado watch in effect in Brooklyn. We're bunkered down here at HRN Studios in a shipping container that I'm pretty sure will just be picked up and carried away to Oz if a tornado does in fact touch down. Miley Cyrus is back in the public eye. The classy Shantouze hosted Saturday Night Live this weekend. I'm still waiting for that horrible fallout that was supposed to happen after her first Sign of the Apocalypse performance on the VMAs. The government can't function. Pop culture sucks. Tornadoes in Brooklyn. Let them eat cheese. This is How to Behave, the Cutting the Curd show on the Heritage Radio Network. To my right, as always, Hannah Howard.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah. So today we have a little Heritage Radio Network Trading Places exercise. We're joined by the host of HRN's Cutting the Curd, Anne Saxelby. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
This is really fun.
It is really fun. It's so weird to be on the other side of this equation.
I know. We've all been in this studio with each other before in different seats, right?
Exactly.
Very strange.
Hannah, when you're on Anne's show, where do you sit?
Well, Anne sat over there where she's sitting now across from you, and I sat over here in this empty ghost chair.
Yeah.
And
the ghost poncho chair.
The ghost poncho chair. And it was similarly strange to be in the unusual seat.
It's a very meta show today.
I know. I usually sit where you're sitting, Brian. It's totally weird. It's totally weird.
Well, it's fun. So first, I want to thank you because this show wouldn't exist if it weren't for you. I was a guest on Cutting the Curd, and that sort of sparked the idea to pitch my idea to HRN. So
that's
so
awesome.
Thank you for being the catalyst that made this possible.
No worries. Thank you for bringing all those excellent cheese pairing things. I remember we had like this epic pairing laid out on the table, and there were like 20 cheeses and 20 condiments, and it was
It's great. I don't talk about it a lot on the show, so I'm not sure everybody knows, but I own a restaurant called Casa Lula that serves a ton of cheese, and so I came on with a couple of great people from my restaurant, and we paired all sorts of crazy stuff with cheese on Anne's show. And so for those of you who don't know, Anne's show, Cutting the Curd, is on when?
Fridays at 4. Might be changing, actually. It might start airing on Mondays in the future, but for now, it's Fridays at 4.
Fridays at 4. Okay. Tune in if you like cheese. It's a great show. So you are also, and I guess primarily, the owner of Saxelby Cheesemongers?
Yes.
So today, I guess we're going to talk about how to behave when cheesed.
Yeah.
When cheese.
I wasn't sure how best to phrase it. When cheese is happening.
When cheese happens.
Yes.
What do you do when cheese happens? Yeah.
So what do you do when cheese happens? Well, why don't you first tell us a little bit about Saxelby Cheesemongers. You have a retail shop, right?
We have a retail store in the Essex Market on the Lower East Side, which has been there since 2006. And we, in 2011, opened a warehouse in Red Hook, Brooklyn, which services our wholesale clients at restaurants and shops. And we deal primarily with local, regional farmstead cheeses, kind of small production stuff. Just really try to, build good relationships with local farms and kind of be the bridge between the farmer and the person who's eating the cheese.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
You've grown quite a bit in the last... When did you open?
2006.
2006.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. So what issues do you face as a cheese retailer in talking about how people behave?
Well, it's funny. Hannah and I were talking a little bit about this when she was on my show back maybe a month or so ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, it would be so fun to do how to behave at the cheese counter, because I feel like you encounter sort of the same things over and over. And it's just really funny. Like, you have almost like archetypes of customers, you know? Yeah. And they range from like awesome to terrible. You know, you have like the great customers who read your email every week and come in and want to buy a pound of each thing that you wrote about. Like, no tastes, no nothing. You
no
know,
questions,
they're just no questions. They're just like, give me the good stuff. And they're loyal and fun and great. And then you have on the opposite end of the spectrum, and I'm picturing one woman in particular, the woman who lives in the neighborhood who, well, it might not even live, she doesn't live in the neighborhood, actually. She teaches in the neighborhood and uses our stop or our shop as a place to kind of harass people while she's waiting for the M15 bus.
Is she a customer, or she's just
she's
somebody
not
who hangs
a customer?
Out?
No, I mean, she pretends to be a customer, but she comes to the counter and she'll ask for, you know, information about this, a taste of that, a taste of that, a taste of that. No, oh, the bus comes and she's gone.
Never buys anything.
Never buys anything. And then she brings around, I mean, I feel bad for her students. She apparently teaches at one of the local elementary schools, but then she brings these, like handicrafts around that the kids make, like cards for holidays and such. And she tries to sell us stuff. And I'm like, you know what, lady? No.
Yeah, you scratch my back.
That's a big no. Yeah. And I hope the kids are seeing some of those profits. Like, I kind of doubt it, but
I wonder if she's had any success harassing other business people and selling their wares.
Yeah.
Probably
does
not.
She harass other vendors in the Essex market, or
she probably
are
does.
You closest to the bus stop?
We're closest to the bus stop.
Yeah,
we're
right by the door.
We're right by the door. We're right inside. Yeah. And another funny thing that I noticed behind the cheese counter, and I don't mean to be, we'll talk about fun, positive stuff too, but one of the things that always makes me laugh is couples that come to the cheese counter who don't maybe, I don't know, are new to the relationship or don't feel comfortable ordering cheese together. It could be like the first time that they're doing this together to have a little dinner party or something.
It's a pretty intimate act, ordering cheese together.
Oh, it really is. And I guess maybe they're afraid they're going to divulge something to the other one that they shouldn't know. But, you know, it's like they'll be like, well, what do you want? And I don't know. What do you want? And then one will say, well, how about, you know, like a creamy cheese? And the other one's like, okay, that sure, yeah, uh-huh. And so you give them a taste of a creamy cheese, and then they withdraw from the counter to whisper to each other and have a meeting about it that they don't tell you about. And then they're just kind of like sitting there waiting, and you know, and then they come back up to the counter and they're like, well, that was pretty good, but like, you know, what else do you have? And then you give, you're like, okay, well, maybe if you, that wasn't quite your thing, then you try something like this, and you give them a taste of something else, and they withdraw again to discuss. It's like, and it cracks me up. It happens all the time.
We need to do a how to behave when you're a couple.
Yes.
Because
that'd be a good one.
I recently came up with a theory, and it's this. Couples suck.
When acting as couples.
Yeah. Everyone behaves worse in a couple.
If you're in a group of 10 people and you say, hey, who wants to do this? 10 people go, I do or I don't. And if you're in a group of 5 couples, you go, who wants to do this? And everybody has to retreat, just like you just said, and then and then come back with their compromise of whether they do or don't.
Right.
We half of us want to do it. We want to do it halfway.
Yeah, exactly. But we're kind of...
It makes couples sound very fragile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The wrong cheese might destroy them.
Exactly.
Well, seriously, though, cheese... Like, really good, high quality, especially, like, farmstead cheeses are intimidating to a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
They don't... They go through the counter and they don't recognize anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so instead of feeling just, you know, secure with the fact that, you know, your cheesemonger probably wants to help you out and probably wants to help you find the right thing, isn't there to, like, talk down to you or, you know, tell you, oh, you don't know anything about anything. I feel like people just need to... you know, embrace the fact that, you know, we're there to help.
It's like a public service announcement. Like, ask for help and it will be granted to you.
It will be provided. Yes. Yeah. There are no dumb questions.
Yeah. It's really frustrating. They pull away and they talk and then they come back to you, and you probably could help them better if you knew what they just said to each other.
Exactly.
But they're hiding it from you because...
Maybe we should like install like a microphone that like overhangs, you know, the area in front of the counter so we can hear any murmuring and whispering.
Yeah. So you'll be like a miracle worker. You'll come back and they'll be like, oh my God, you read our minds. How did you know we wanted this perfect cheese?
Yeah. Or then I'm sure you'd overhear some really horrifying things too. Then you'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah, they're not talking about cheese.
That. Yeah.
So what's your advice then to people? What's the right way to handle being at the cheese counter when you don't know a whole lot about what you're doing?
Well, like I said, I think, you know, put your faith in your monger. You know, I feel like cheesemongers are by definition kind of nerdy, you know, and in a good way, you know, and really excited about their product. And so I feel like if you just kind of ask people for, you know, their recommendation, of course, giving them information about what you like, you know, you should all come out pretty happy. I feel like I do that wherever I go. I feel like, you know, that when I'm at a restaurant and I don't know, you know, what I want for wine, you know, it's normal to ask the sommelier, and I feel like most people feel comfortable with that kind of transaction. So why should it be different when you go to the cheese counter?
It's surprisingly common for people to come into the restaurant and not ask the waiter or the sommelier what they should do.
Huh.
Or for help in what they should do.
I was out with my family last night, and they were having like so much trouble with the wine list. And I suggested that we ask for assistance from the people at the restaurant. And they were like, they were refused. They were like, no. Which is strange to me, because like you say, people who work with cheese are inclined to be knowledgeable and excited about cheese. So I think there's like a combination of being... embarrassed about your own lack of knowledge, like you have to pretend that you're an expert, and then also like not having faith in the people around you, which is strange to me too. It's like, have you been steered to awful cheese before? Is that a problem?
Right. Or maybe just feeling, yeah, like bashful too. Yeah, totally. But I feel like it's a resource. It's there waiting for you.
Why do they think the person is standing behind the counter?
Exactly.
If not to answer questions and offer advice.
Exactly.
Do you find that there's a gender issue? Like, in the story you just told about the couple, I'm envisioning them retreating and the guy saying, I only like cheddar. That's it. Nothing else. And the woman trying to get him to open his mind.
New.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
do you see differences like that? Gender differences?
Well, there could be. I don't know if there are gender differences so much as I feel like, you know, it seems to me that with a lot of couples, one likes the really raunchy, like, get out of the room, smelly, awful cheese, mm-hmm. and one only likes cheddar. Or one only likes, like, the really creamy, buttery, kind of triple creme style, and the other one wants, like, blue. You know, but yeah. I feel like that's kind of, in my mind, that's what makes a good couple. If you've got one of each, then, you know, opposites attract. Well, you guys are going to have a nice cheese plate, you know, the whole spectrum.
It can be complimentary if it's the right kind of people, but that can also be a situation where the one who likes the stinky stuff has to wait until their partner's away on a business trip to get the cheese they like.
It's true. Apparently, there's this whole French line of Tupperware that is designed as a cheese box. My friend Laure is French, obviously. Her name's Laure. And she lives here in the States now. But we were hashing a plan. We're like, wow, we should like, you know, find a way to like import this Tupperware for Americans. Because then you could resolve that issue. You know, just put your stinky cheese in the cheese Tupperware.
Yeah.
And you'd be okay.
Well, that surprises me. At Casalula, we do cheese plates that usually have 3, 4, 5, 6 cheeses on them. And the number of people who say, like they're part of a group and they say, no blue cheese. As if because they don't want blue, nobody in the group should have blue.
Terrible.
Like, it's a...
Yeah, that's an aggressive act of cheese.
I wish we were on TV so people could see the expression on Anne's face right now. She's appalled.
Disgusted.
Yeah. It's just, and that's like cheese, I don't know. I don't want to say like cheese racism because that makes it sound way too extreme.
Yeah. Cheese tyranny.
Cheese xenophobia.
Yeah, cheese xenophobia. It's say you don't like blue cheese because you had one that was too strong. I mean, come on. There's like a whole world of blues out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to have to take a short break. But when we come back, how to behave during a tornado. Live.
Ah.
This is How to Behave on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You are listening to 1000 Breakfasts with You by Cookies on the Heritage Radio Network.org. From the small streets where you draw your breath with mine. Stars, stars for you. Stars, stars for you. Strawberry coffee for two. 1000 Breakfasts with You. Strawberry coffee for two. 1000 Breakfasts with You. 1000 Breakfasts with You. 1000 Breakfasts with You. I'll hold you by the sleeves and do what you please. I won't make a sound. I'm the little pup you picked up at the pound. You can push me around.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
We're back. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. On our show today, Ann Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers and Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
One of the issues that I struggle with a lot as I evangelize for cheese is how to encourage people to embrace cheese's volatile nature. Like, people ask me all the time, what's your favorite cheese? And all the cheese people I know sort of roll their eyes at that question. Like, well, what, you know, today, what's my favorite cheese? Because it was different yesterday. And because we do so much with pairings, pairing beverages and pairing condiments and stuff with cheese, people ask me, like, I'm having a party. What should I get? And this is kind of connected to what we were talking about earlier, because I say, I don't know. The only person who really knows what cheese you should buy is the person behind the counter at the cheese, wherever you're buying your cheese. They know what they have and what's good. And people seem to want this, like, straight answer. Like, just tell me Kraft cheddar goes with sliced apples, and so I can go to the store and buy it.
Exactly. They want certainty. Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I guess, you know, I feel the same as you do. I feel like, you know, I have a different favorite cheese every day. Today, my favorite cheese was queso dell'Inverno, and it's been a while since that was my favorite cheese. I did a staff training this afternoon at a hotel, and we tasted a bunch of stuff, and that one, I was like, wow, that was so great.
That was my favorite cheese in February of 2005.
There you go.
Was that a scientific answer?
They weren't making it back then.
Weren't they?
2005? No, I don't think so. They started, to my knowledge. Well, anyways, sorry.
I don't know. I just made that date up.
Yeah. No, but it's like, you know, the cheese is like, it's like going to the green market and like feeling if, like, you know, the peaches are ripe or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you want a peach, but it's not a ripe peach. And so you're going to wait, or you're going to get a hard peach and you're going to be disappointed. So same thing with cheese. If you trust, like you said, the person who's selling you your cheese, they're going to tell you which one's ripe and delicious and ready to go, and which one, you know, maybe you liked last week, but this week isn't, you know, quite right. Yeah. I feel like in France, they get that a lot more. You know, it's like, that's part of the transaction. You know, you go to the cheese counter, and the cheesemonger not only recommends a cheese for you, but then they recommend a specific piece of cheese for you. You know, they say, do you want to serve it tonight or tomorrow or in 4 days, you know, and then they'll pick the one that's going to be perfect, you know, for that moment in time. So I feel like we're evolving in that direction, but I think it'll take a while.
That was the really fun part when I briefly worked behind the cheese counter at Fairway. Was once in a while I'd get a customer who would say, I'm having a party and I want to have a lot of cheese and I don't know what to have. And I'd kind of like take their basket and like make them a shopping basket full of all their cheeses that they should have. And it's like, there you go. So that's fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like in France, like it's a culture where everybody has been eating cheese their whole life. And so it really helps that the audience is on the same page as the monger. Like, they know how the system works.
Right, right. And there
they understand
trust.
What they're eating, too, that it's like a living, breathing thing and that it works that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, Americans grew up in the second half of the 20th century with commercial industrialized cheese that isn't alive and growing and changing all the time.
And so
Tillamook cheddar is always Tillamook cheddar.
Yep.
And so my way of dealing with the problem is having shows like this where we talk about it and people are paying attention. And shows like yours. And,
but you guys are both, like, I guess I am too. I can include myself. We're all like educating people about this new brave, old brave world. So it's kind of cool that I think people are getting it, and people who are inclined to get it have a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And certainly, do you find that in the 7 years that you've been open, do you find that your customers are more knowledgeable and better informed now than they were when you opened?
Yeah, I feel like people are more knowledgeable. Well, I feel like there's just more good cheese around in general. You know, when I opened, we were the only store in New York that was focusing only on local American stuff. And now, you know, you go to Whole Foods and you see a lot of the same cheeses, you know. There's just a much wider availability, I feel like, of cheese in general, but also of these local, you know, sort of small production or farmstead cheeses.
Yeah.
And so now we have people coming to the counter and saying, oh, I want Kunik or I want Humble Pie. Whereas before, you know, just the names alone were like, huh? They're just
right.
Like,
people have actually
I like
heard
Brie.
Of Kunik.
Like, well, yeah, people have actually heard of the cheeses that we sell, which is cool.
Yeah, that's great. How do you feel about the way that so many cheeses are now available in grocery stores and more places across the country, like Murray's and Artisanal are wrapping cheeses in advance and selling them at Kroger's and Piggly Wiggly and places like that. Do you feel like that's good for the cheese industry?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, in New York, we're spoiled because we can go to a number of different cheese counters, a number of different shops, and find great stuff in a different selection at each place. And, you know, I grew up in the Midwest and, you know, in the suburbs of Chicago, and there just wasn't a lot around. So I feel like for a large part of the country, that's like their entry point. You know what I mean? I feel like that's like their Manchego. You know, I feel like Manchego is inevitably like the first like European cheese that Americans try. And they're like, whoa, what's that? You know? And so that's great. You know, I feel like the more you can like turn the light switch on, you know, it's better.
Yeah.
For me personally, I know that having cheese that's like pre-cut and wrapped in plastic isn't the greatest thing. You know, in my mind, it would be great if even those big stores could evolve towards like having a cut-to-order counter.
And somebody behind the counter who really knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But it's certainly better than nothing. And I think definitely addressing like a growing demand and a growing desire for better food and education about that food.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. It's the you used the word gateway, didn't you? Like,
yeah.
Baby steps.
It would be great if people had a Saxelby cheesemongers in every town in the country, but that's not going to happen. And so it's great that they're getting some good cheeses and learning a little bit about them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And you can't go from like nothing to a Saxelby counter at once. So maybe this is like
you get whiplash.
Right. Too much.
Okay. It is time for the This Week in Behavior quiz. I know you've been studying all week and knowing that you're going to be on the show.
I drank some coffee to try and prepare myself, you know.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. Joe is up at his mic, right, Joe?
I'm ready.
All right. Joe, our engineer, is the reigning champion of This Week in Behavior.
Joe, I'm going to take you down.
Okay, so the rules for the one of you here who doesn't know is I'm going to ask a question. If you know the answer, say your name, and I will, in my sole discretionary judgment, decide whose name I heard first. and you get to answer the question. And if you're wrong, whoever says their name second gets to try to answer it. Okay? So this week, a 9-year-old boy was in the news for doing what? I'll give you a hint. It started at the airport in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Further proof that I'm the only person
Hannah
who reads.
Twerking?
Hannah, no, it is not twerking. This week, a 9-year-old boy was in the news for sneaking through security, sneaking onto an airplane, and flying to Las Vegas.
What?
From St. Paul, Minnesota.
A 9-year-old?
9-year-old boy got through the TSA checkpoints, got through the metal detectors, and somehow got on the plane without a ticket. And they discovered while he was on the plane on the way to Las Vegas that he was not supposed to be there.
That is like the opposite of Home Alone.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
It is.
That would make a great movie.
how not to behave when your airport security...
Yeah.
Ticket taker. Everybody. Like,
or that 9-year-old's parents. Like, where were they?
They're like 10 holes in the system there. Okay. The driver of an SUV in New York City was dragged from his car and beaten by whom? God, I really...
Was this like a
really
football... Oh, I think it was like a football situation? Or there was like some sports involved?
It was not.
I thought this was going to be about like Congress and stuff.
You know what? Well, it was last
week. Where are you getting your news?
Last week
was all Congress all the time.
We were supposed to talk about hair, and I just wouldn't shut up about the government. And so I kind of bored myself. So this week I'm trying to overcompensate.
You're like New York Posting it.
You know what? No. You know what I think might be true? That because the internet, like Google News and things like that, actually are studying us and they're giving us the news we want. So I'm reading different news than everybody else. That might be the case. So this week, a bunch of guys on motorcycles dragged this guy out of his SUV and beat him up. I would say that's not...
Oh,
how
I did
you should
hear
behave.
About that.
That's how you should not behave.
Why?
Well, it depends on what side you hear. Apparently, this was on the Henry Hudson Parkway on the west side of Manhattan. And apparently this like bunch of motorcycles surrounded this SUV. And then guys in front of him started going really slow, like they were messing with him. And then, according to the driver, he accidentally hit one of the guys in front of him who was messing with him. And then everybody stopped. And then all these guys on motorcycles surrounded this guy. And he was in this car with his family. And he felt threatened, and so he punched it and hit one of the guys and sped up the highway. And then all the other guys got on their motorcycles and chased him down and made him stop and bashed in his windshield or his driver's side window and dragged him out and beat the crap out of him. It's all on video. You should watch. You should go on the internet. It's awesome.
Dear God.
So I would say everybody's behavior was not acceptable in that scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, who said the following? Now that white people are doing it, it seems kind of lame.
Well, that's about twerking.
There's got to be some twerking. Yeah.
So, who said that?
The person who invented twerking.
Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus. Oh, that is correct.
My first one is Miley Cyrus. I love it.
Miley Cyrus was the host and the musical guest on Saturday Night Live this week and did not twerk on the show. And she said... I read that she said this. I didn't actually see the show. I don't know if she said it on the show or just in to somebody else. But she said, now that white people are doing it, it seems kind of lame. Wow. Which is bold for a white...
Yeah.
The white person who's doing it.
Right.
All right. Here's one that I'm 100% positive that nobody's going to get. Who tweeted the following? Listen, we're all possibly Frank Sinatra's son.
Kanye.
Robin Thicke.
What happened to the rules of the game? You're supposed to shout out your own name so that I know who to call on. No. Joe, do you have a random...
Ted Cruz?
We are all possibly Frank Sinatra's son. No, it was Ronan Farrow, son of Mia Farrow, and either Woody Allen or Frank Sinatra. They're not sure. And it's creepy because if you look at a picture of him, he looks exactly like Frank Sinatra. But he has lived his life as the supposed biological son of Woody Allen.
They look pretty different.
It's not like you look at them and go, God, I see a little bit of both in there. No, yeah. There's no Woody Allen. There's nothing about him that's Woody Allen at all.
That's like Prince Harry. I saw a photo once of Diana's, you know, like alleged lover that like she might have had. Oh, sorry, that was my umbrella. That she might have had, you know, an affair with, and looks exactly like Prince Harry. Yeah,
that's kind of awesome.
I know.
All right. Well, sadly, that's all the time we have today. So, a huge thanks to our guest, Ann Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers and Cutting the Curd.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And thanks to the woman who spends her days giving a voice to cheese, Hannah Howard.
Thank you, Ryan.
The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lindbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show. Better luck on the quiz next week, Joe. I hope you study. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser. And trust me, your favorite cheese is one you haven't tried yet. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.